Hello, Colorado Springs. This is Matt Wiley, sports editor at the Gazette. I'm joined today by Brent Brigeman, our Air Force beat writer. A little bit of news today, huh, Brent?
We got to meet a new basketball coach today.
And that basketball coach is Joe Scott. His hiring was made official yesterday. What was your first impression of Coach Scott?
Well, obviously Joe Scott's been here before. He was the Air Force coach from 2000 to 2004, and the first three seasons were losing seasons and built to that 2004 year, which was, memorable in Air Force history. They went to the NCAA tournament. They won their only Mountain West title that season. So obviously he's been a guy who's been here, and a lot of that was reflected in the way he talked on today. He was very confident. He knows the kind of program he wants to build here. He likes the kind of cadet athletes he's going to have, and he seems to know what he's doing. At least he has confidence that he knows what he's doing, and he seems really excited to get going.
So some of the comments on some of the stories you've written over the past 2 days, readers have said that Joe Scott left for bigger and better things. Can you clarify why he left the first time?
Again, I said he's here for 4 years. He's a New Jersey native. He played at Princeton and then was an assistant at Princeton before coming to Air Force. And, from what I've heard, he had basically told people, if there was one job that came open that I would leave for, it's Princeton. And sure enough, Princeton came open, right? As he kind of, accelerated his position with that, or elevated his position with that 2004 season. And so he left for Princeton. It's not like he took a bigger and better job somewhere else. He took a lateral move, essentially, probably moved down, going from Mountain West to the Ivy League, but for a place that represented home. So, if you're going to forgive somebody a move, that should certainly be one. A lot of people are pretty bitter about Jeff Bezdelic leaving a couple years later, but I don't think anybody really holds any grudges over the way Joe Scott left. I think there's just a lot of, ill-informed people who would just assume he was, a climber at that point, but it wasn't that at all.
Well, yeah, it may make sense. It was his alma mater. So years later, why does this hire make sense now?
Well, the way it makes sense for Joe Scott, the way he was talking about it, he's since he left here, he didn't stay at Princeton long. He was only there 3 years, and he just didn't really, have the same success there that he had here. He spent 9 years at Denver, took them to some of their best seasons in history, but didn't sustain that level. And then he's been an assistant for the past 4 years at Holy Cross and Georgia, so he's seen a lot of different basketball, a lot of different kinds of student athletes. And what he seems excited about is, he is known as such a worker. He loves the grind. He loves gritty players. And at Air Force, that's what they produce. You can find guys who want that military aspect in their life and want to see some of that carryover onto the basketball floor. So he
Well,
wants to breathe.
as you mentioned, he likes the grinders. He likes those players. What if, and you had the story in the Gazette that ran, what would it be? It would be Wednesday morning, and it was previous players talked about Coach Scott. Can you elaborate a little bit on that story?
Yeah, well, the best story I had from him was from Antoine Hood. When we had talked a couple years ago, we did an anniversary look at some of those teams, and he said basically the reason they were so close is because they united against their coach. And he didn't mean that maliciously or, in any way to disrespect the coach, but he was so demanding as a coach that the players had to find solace in themselves, console themselves against him because he just put them through such a grind. And he basically said, any recruits considering Air Force, just understand that he's not going to want you if you're not a gritty player, and you're not going to work there if you're not a gritty player. And I think that's going to be music to the ears of a lot of people who follow this program, because I think there's just a certain expectation when you watch Air Force basketball that you want to see those guys who are, the floor burns types, who love to get on the floor, love to play defense, and love to excel at the little things. And I think Joe Scott brings that out of guys because he is so demanding. He loves detail. He is a loud, yelling coach, very animated on the sidelines. And he is kind of the personification of the intense basketball coach, and he demands that of his players. And former players said, everything he appears to be, he is to the umpteenth level. I mean, he will demand that all the time, and it's unrelenting.
And then in today's teleconference, did you get any inclination of what he thinks about the current roster, or did he get into that at all?
He didn't talk about any details of, specific players. He did say clearly the cupboard is not bare. He knows there's a lot of experience coming back. He likes what he's seen from players on film, but he didn't want to make any bold declarations because he knows what he's going to be asking of them isn't what they've been asked before, which isn't to say they haven't played at a high level and all that. It's just going to be different. So it's hard to evaluate someone in a different system until you kind of see them running what you want. But he does think there's some talent to work with, and he said that's his first priority, is making sure all of these guys are quickly informed as to what the expectations are going to be, what the program's going to be moving forward, and so they can all get on board. Because he said before he turns the attention to recruiting, he wants to make sure the guys in-house are taken care of, because those are the, you know, that's what they're going to be doing every day, is working with these guys, and so that's the number one priority.
Did he mention at all of what he's looking for in assistant coaches, or does he have a relationship with anyone? Are there any potential candidates out there that maybe were former players or anything like that?
We've heard some names, nothing confirmed yet. He didn't give any names. He just said basically the profile he wants are, you know, people who are intrinsically motivated. He wants people who live that life every day so that the players can see that and just kind of feed off that and learn from that. And he also, you know, he said he's 54, you know, 54 years old. He doesn't feel like that, but he knows he is. So he mentioned he would like to get a couple of younger legs and minds and hearts in there working with him to help him. So look for a younger coach. But he said the biggest thing is someone who's going to be able to understand and respect what the cadets are going through. And so that, you know, because, again, you have to be, you're there for them every day. You have to understand their needs and wants and you know, be that shoulder to lean on. So he wants somebody who buys into that first and foremost. But then there's, you know, he said people with shared experiences and people from his past will obviously be considered. But I would certainly look for at least one or two Air Force grads to be on that list.
And do you know, has his coaching style changed since he was here last time? I mean, before he was known for the Princeton offense and running the shot clock down. Now the shot clock, you know, isn't – the rules have changed in college basketball. The shot clock isn't as deep as it used to be. Do you think that his style has changed, and will that be reflected by the play on the court?
Well, that was the first thing I asked him. And, you know, without going into what his plans are going to be X's and O's, he basically said, you know, he's been in college basketball this whole time. He's seen the adaptations that have happened. He understands that it's different. And he said even then it was different based on, you know, what rules were being emphasized at a certain time. And there's never been just a steady stream. Everything has always been changing. And so, you know, what he ran then, he probably won't be able to run now, but he said that was secondary to just instilling that work ethic and that mindset. And he said that's where the growth comes from, and that's where winning comes from, is the energy you get from playing good defense, from understanding who you are as a player, building confidence because you practice at a high level all the time. So more than the X's and O's, he's worried about that. I think he'll just kind of have to evaluate what you can run in this day and age. And there's, you know, there's going to be transfers that come in all the time in the Mountain West. So the level of play he's going to face is going to be higher than it was the first time around. So nothing is going to be an exact carbon copy, but I think he wants the same mentality. That's the blueprint he's working from, and the X's and O's will come off of that secondary.
Well, and you mentioned defense and that type of almost, and you said gritty and grind. What type of defense will they run? Do you know that? And then do you think that that will be enough to excite the fan base to get people to pack Clune Arena?
You know, he didn't go into any sort of details. You know, at Denver, he ran kind of a matchup man-to-man. It was hard to explain what it would be. You would go back into man, but then you would sort of drift into zone-type concepts. So it's not just a straight man, and it's certainly not a full zone. But again, that was several years ago. He's been at two stops since then. I think the main thing is just going to be the style of play. He said he wants to be a team that other teams hate to play defensively because of the way they defend you. And he said if they can play with that kind of energy on the defensive end, people naturally will like it. They'll want to go watch that style. So in terms of packing Clune, you know, he made no bold declarations about this is how many games we'll win or this is when we'll be back in contention. You know, he said the key is just to instill the mindset. And he said, if they play that way, he's confident people around here will want to watch that style.
Are there any other teams in the Mountain West that play a similar style that, you know, fans listening to this podcast could relate to, or any teams beyond, like, and let's set the record straight. He was at Georgia last year.
Yeah. You know, you always think of San Diego State as a defensive team first. And I kind of used to sort of think about that with Wyoming, the way they would run the shot clock and then play defense. I think it's going to be a similar style to that. Obviously, you're not going to have the same kind of defenders San Diego State has with that kind of length and speed. And I don't think they're necessarily going to milk the clock the way Wyoming did for those years under Larry Shyatt. But just, I think the closest comparison would be the women's team at the Air Force Academy. The way they just pride themselves, no matter what's happening on offense, they are going to be pesky on defense, and they're going to be gritty, and they're going to annoy you. And I think that's the style he's looking for. And again, just hearing from Air Force fans, like, that's really what they want to see. You know, you just want to see hard-nosed guys, and I think that's what he's going to bring to the table.
Do you have any inclination of the, you know, does he play double post players? Or like you said, he didn't get into the X's and O's. Is he guard heavy, or does he just kind of react to the recruits that he has? And I doubt you got into this today, but did he mention the type of player that he wants to recruit beyond the military life?
No, I mean, he basically talked only about mindset. And, you know, when he was here before, he tended to get a lot of shooters. You know, four of the best three-point shooters in Air Force history played under him. And I think, you know, shooting, you've got to be able to shoot the ball in order for all these things to run, because that's going to pull the guys out to the line. And then you can, then you, the backdoor passes can be more effective, because the zone, you can't just pack in a zone, and, you know, you just have more spacing to work with. So I think, you know, without needing to go into ask him about it, you know, he's going to look for shooters who obviously have some length, because that's going to help you defensively. But beyond that, he didn't set a profile at all.
And now tell a little bit about the interview process with the Academy, and just basically getting him here during this pandemic. Was it all over the phone? Was it a teleconference like we're doing right now? We're practicing social distancing. Everyone out there, do the same, be safe. But did he at all talk about the process, the communication from the Academy, anything like that? And can you give a little detail behind how this hire was made?
Yeah, so early in the process, it was all over the phone. But that was actually aided by this, if anything, because all these teams were pulled out of the conference tournaments. There was no NCAA tournament. So a lot of coaches had some time on their hands to answer the phone. But then once they whittled it down to five, they were able to talk to them in person. They just flew them into Denver. They met there at the Westin Hotel at DIA. And then the coaches returned home after that. So they brought in five finalists and had a whole committee go up and meet with them in face-to-face. So they were able to have that interaction. You know, I would hope from 6 feet away. You know, we didn't get that exact detail. If there were still handshakes and that kind of stuff. But the important thing was they were able to see them face-to-face and have those talks and kind of gauge a personality in a way that you can't do it over the phone. So even though the pandemic was going on and it did obviously impact things, it didn't take away that part of the interview.
And we've received numerous emails at the Gazette. A lot of people talk about the coach that Scott will be replacing, Coach P, as everyone affectionately calls him. Do you think there's going to be a bit of a transition to fill that gap, or do you think that winning will, because Coach P was so well respected as like a great human being from all the accounts that we got or all the emails that we receive at the Gazette, do you think there's going to be a transition there?
I think sports fans know how to turn the page. You know, I think there's always going to be some people who are disappointed that he was let go because of what he brought as a person. But I think there are a lot of people who understand the move, even those who like him, just because Air Force did have seven consecutive losing seasons. And at some point, you do want to do what you can to field a more competitive team. And they were, it's not that they weren't in games, but they weren't finishing games. And that was a pattern for years. So I think even the fans that were on the fence are not happy about the move, still at least in some part understand it. And I think they would be very adaptable. If there's a coach who comes in, instills the values they want, and plays a fun brand of basketball, particularly if they can start winning, I think you're going to convert all those people over. And then the ones who did want a move made are probably pretty happy, because a lot of them were clamoring for that, to get back to the way they had things in the past. And no better way to get there than to bring back the guy who orchestrated all of that in the past.
Well, and as you reported the day when this job became open, Joe Scott was the front runner from the start. He had this reputation. He was hard-nosed. He would bring a certain style. Was there anything in today's teleconference that surprised you or struck you as, oh, this wasn't what I was expecting? Or was it pretty much, yeah, this is the exact guy I thought it was going to be?
No, it was. Paul Klee's going to have some interesting details about the specific wording Nathan Pine used. But Nathan Pine and Joe Scott worked together at Holy Cross, because Joe Scott was an assistant there and Nathan Pine was athletic.
And then for people that don't know, Nathan Pine is the athletic director at the Air Force Academy.
He's the one who made the hire. And so, you know, that was part of the speculation as to why Joe Scott was going to be the front runner, because they had a history and there were some whispers that it was kind of his intention to bring him back. So that's why, that's what launched all of that. And I guess if anything, there was a question of how legitimate this search really was. And, you know, the fact that they did bring in five people during a pandemic to Denver, you would hope they at least legitimately did open this up, but it sounds like it was Joe Scott's job to lose from the start. And Nathan Fine did say one very curious thing when he mentioned that Joe Scott helped the Holy Cross get to the NCAA tournament, when in fact that was actually Joe Scott's final year at Denver. So, you know, if he was using that as part of the rationale for making a hire when that didn't actually happen, you know, that was certainly a puzzling mistake to make. But, you know, again, if this is all based on Joe Scott's past year, I still think it's a justifiable hire. But it was just a little bit strange that Nathan Pine would make an error in talking about a really key part of his background. So that was a little surprising. But in general, this was, again, the hire a lot of us expected from the beginning. And it just played out, like I said, the way we kind of thought it would.
Well, I think we're going to wrap up here. Brent, you're in a house of five. You have three little girls to look after. I appreciate your time. Again, my name is Matt Wiley. You can follow me on Twitter, MW Coyote. I'm the sports editor at the Gazette. Reach out with any story ideas. And Brent, go ahead and give your info.
Yeah, well, obviously my stuff is available in print and online at gazette.com. And I'm at Brent Bergman on Twitter. I put all my stuff on there, and we'll have a lot. You know, we've got some stories coming out later this evening. This is Wednesday evening when we're recording this, so it'll be online tonight and then in the print tomorrow. And then a few more stories coming out of today's press conference and some other reactions I've been able to get. And, of course, we're still tracking some of our old stuff from spring football that we're still rolling out, stories that haven't been told yet about the team. So there's still a lot of Air Force content to be read. And hopefully, as this, you know, as this runs its course and we all social distance, we'll be able to get the cadets back out there over the summer and have business as usual in the fall and resume with all the coverage.
All right. Thanks a lot for everyone for listening. If you made it this far in our podcast, stay safe and stay informed. Thanks.